even though it can be hard at times, I always appreciate when you come to me with things that you need to talk about. And we need to talk about something and it feels like a sensitive topic. You like preface it with what I need to be prepared for and what we need to be prepared for in order to have a successful conversation, which is so helpful, even though it can still be hard and scary and triggering.
Welcome to The Art of We, the podcast where we explore how committed partnerships can be potent vehicles for fully delivering our gifts to the world. Hi, I'm Krista Vanderveer, a seasoned consultant and executive coach.
And I'm Dr. Will Vanderveer, a leader and educator in integrative mental health and wellness. As husband and wife and business partners, we keep learning that the key to maximizing our authenticity and impact in the world lies inside the health, security, and depth of our relationship.
On this show, we'll pull back the curtains to share lessons, insights, and practices from our own marriage and professional careers that help us thrive. If you're a leader, founder, or overachiever, and you want to leverage your relationships for personal and collective growth, then you're in the right place.
Welcome to The Art of We. This is episode number 82. We're going to do something a little bit different on this episode. We're going to be answering questions from Oprah.
What's the title of our episode?
Questions from Oprah. Because these are questions that come from Oprah's website. So she had an article that I happened to find that said something like questions for couples. So there's a total of 110 questions that in a partnership you can ask your partner. So we decided that we would do something a little different and ask each other some of these questions. Now we don't know what we're going to ask each other. So we haven't done any preparation for this.
And we don't know the answers either.
Right. These are questions that we're actually curious about and interested in knowing the answer. So we'll see what happens. So I will ask Will three questions and Will ask me three questions and we'll go back and forth. How does that sound, Will?
Sounds great.
Okay, let's do it.
What is something you used to believe about relationships that you no longer believe?
Ooh, that is a good one. Well, two things come to mind. The first one is that I think I used to believe that relationships were somewhat static. Like you get the partner, you get to know each other, and you live happily ever after because you know each other. And there's safety in that kind of knowing of each other. But in fact, what I've realized is there isn't safety in quote unquote knowing each other, because in my experience, at least growth-minded people are interested in continually changing and growing. So I think I used to believe that once you found your partner and you knew you were good for each other, that it wasn't going to be as hard after that. Like that was the hardest part, was finding the person and getting to a full yes, each of you. And then it's not hard after that. That's one thing.
Yeah, that reminds me of something our friend Jason Gaddis often says in his messaging on social media around the relationship school, is you better drop the idea that happy relationships are easy.
I think that felt like a big cultural message when I was younger for some reason. Maybe it was the magazines I was flipping through, or I don't know where I got that idea, but he's spot on about that. And the second thing is that relationship, in the way that we hold it, in the way that we have done it and we're working towards doing it, can create more freedom internally than I imagined. Like the way that you and I decide to grow together and support each other and be for each other's greatest success is more about more and more freedom than it is about controlling our partner and attempting to them to fit in some sort of idea that we want them to fit into. And I didn't realize that relationship could be set up that way, which I think is really cool.
I think I held that view too, that, you know, the more committed you are, the more locked in you are in your relationship, the less freedom you have. I think I definitely held that inside of myself. And I think that's also a cultural message that we get growing up, that you better enjoy your freedom now before you get married. And then once you're committed, you're all the metaphors, the ball and chain or the whatever.
Totally. So bad.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a story you told about a couple that we know, and we don't need to say their names or anything like that. But do you remember the story where I think the male in the couple was he was starting to get trapped inside the relationship or something like that. Like they were starting to get closer. They were starting to do more things. They were getting into more commitment and he was having a reaction to that. And she said,
what did she say?
She said something to the effect of like, I'm standing for your freedom as much as you are, or maybe even more than you are. I don't remember how she said it.
Yeah.
But that felt like a really potent moment for him. And then also for you, like I felt like you hearing that story landed in you pretty hard of what can be possible in a relationship.
Yeah, that was really impactful to hear that. And it's not different from some of the things you've said to me over the years being together of, you know, standing for each other's greatest success and one of our vows. It's a different kind of freedom to be on your own. You get to decide what movie you're going to. You get to decide what restaurant you're going to. You can look at your phone during dinner.
Exactly.
You don't have to think about the impact on the other person of your behavior, but not having that support of having a person who is every bit as committed to your fullest potential, it just makes things harder not having that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, my turn. You ready?
Yes.
Okay, this is a really serious one, so get ready for it. Would you rather be a vampire or a werewolf, and why?
I saw that question in the list, and I didn't pick it for you, but I answered in my head. I thought about it. It's funny you picked that one.
What did you come up with?
Well, there was a phase where I read some of those vampire books, and I remember arriving at the conclusion that I never want to be a vampire because it's really hard to be killed.
Oh, you want to be killed?
Well, I think that there's a huge problem with living forever. Mm. Because as one of our friends, we just met up with someone who's really special to us who doesn't live here anymore. And she said something about death makes life hilarious or funny or something like that. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, when I was reading these vampire books, that part of the suffering of a vampire is that the people they care about die within normal lifespans, and they're just going on and on for centuries. And it's really disturbing to live a life that way.
Don't they have vampire friends though?
Well, not in the books I read.
Okay, got it.
So I don't know if werewolves live a long time or not, but there's something bittersweet and it's heartbreaking that we live, if things go well, in the neighborhood of 100 years and not more than that. But I think it creates a sense of presence and healthy sense of appreciation for the present when you know that it's not here forever.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And with a werewolf, you probably have a pack, right? Do werewolves have packs? They can communities they can go cuddle up with at nighttime?
I don't know. I mean, I think a werewolf isn't a werewolf somebody who's human, but then they turn into a wolf or, you know, a different thing when the moon is full or something like that.
Oh, okay. And then they howl at the moon.
Howl at the moon and so on.
Okay. Well, sometimes you make noises at nighttime.
Oh.
During the night.
Like a werewolf?
Yeah. So maybe you are a part werewolf. I don't know. That's why I have to wear earplugs.
Okay.
Okay. Good answer. I like it. I like your answer.
Well, it's my turn. This is a good one. I wonder how you're going to answer this. How do you hide anger when you don't want it to show?
Good one. And good one for you to know, probably.
Yes.
Boy. Well, have you ever seen me stomp around the house and do things really fast and rapidly and like I'm kind of like putting up an invisible barrier to be contacted? Like, don't get near me, mofo, because I'm going to bite your head off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that could be one way. I think you know that.
Yep.
You've known that pretty well. We've gotten into some ruptures about the energetics that I'm putting off during those moments.
Sure. Since the question is, how do you hide your anger? Is there perception inside of yourself when you're doing that you're camouflaging your anger or that I can't tell or that you're hiding it effectively?
So good. Oh, that's such a good question because it has become a little more conscious about what's going on there. And I think in part, I'm hoping that you're just going to go do your own thing. You're going to get irritated by my energetics and you're going to go do your own thing. Like that's part of it. And then there's probably another part of me that's operating there where it's like trying to get attention, like some level of I'm in need and I can't express my need and I need help. So there's probably both parts operating. But the thing is that you're probably going to get kind of like some damaged. Well, you might get damaged in the process of asking me what's going on. Not damaged really, but like I might not say very nice things probably. But you've learned to approach me in those moments in a way that, you know, we've talked through this before. It's like one of the things that as a person in a couplehood, we do these particular things like they came into the relationship with us and they give us opportunities to work with. And you and I have worked with this quite a bit. Like when I'm running around the house trying to get the house just right before the people come over or whatever's going to happen. And we've come to the practice of me being better at asking for help there. And you've done such a good job of like approaching me with a really sweet and soft energy of being like, how can I help get the house ready? And I think the anger that's underneath it is more of this like frustration of thinking I'm alone in getting something that I have a need about, but you don't have the need to have it be just perfect, but I have a need for it to be just perfect. And so I feel alone in my need because I don't want to put that on you. So then I just get into this like weird stew of frustration and independence and negative energy. So,
well, it makes sense that if your perception was that you were alone in cleaning up the house and there's my stuff is around or whatever, which is often the case, if that was up to you to do that, if I were you, I'd feel angry too. So I understand that. But I'm glad that our experiences have softened the perception that you're alone in it. Because even if I'm blind to my impact on you or the stuff that I left around that you wish wasn't there, I don't ever want you to feel alone in it. And definitely don't want you to feel like it's your job to do that.
I so appreciate that. Yeah. And for anybody who's listening and can resonate with getting the house just so or needing the house to be organized in a particular way, I feel like we just had a really big breakthrough around this. At least it feels like we did, which is that I recently went through and organized the glasses in the cupboards, the different styles of glasses, where the glasses live, how they're like put in. So when you open up a cabinet, it's like organization and it just makes you so happy, makes me so happy. Just look to see how organized it is. Like something in my system calms down. And I think this is an important point. I'm not feeling like I'm going off point in terms of the art of we, because normally what I would do is organize the cabinet and say some sort of like passive aggressive comment like, hey, Will, see how nice it looks right now? Trying to imply, hey, can you put the things back where I just, you know, set them up to be? But instead, I said to you, and you can tell me if this is, if it made a difference, but instead I said to you, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how impactful it is in my system when I walk into the kitchen and I look at the glasses, for example, and they're like all organized. I feel so relaxed and nourished and calm. And so I'm sharing with you like why it's important to me versus just passive aggressively saying something. And then I asked you if you would support me in attempting to put things back where they belong to help get the benefit of the work that I just did.
Yeah, to help you feel good. I mean, that is speaking to my values because I really want to help you feel good. And that was a great demonstration, by the way. I appreciate that. You haven't done that with me very much, but it definitely has a, you know, kind of like a covert, yeah, it's passive aggressive because there's a covert judgment there or accusation that, you know, I'm not on your team or I'm continually undermining your experience of the joy of order in your life.
Right. Again, like something that I feel like I need, but you don't necessarily need it in the way I need it. So it's like, how do we come to support each other here? And I think that we're doing a great job. And then I opened the cabinet and you organized these glasses that weren't organized. And I was like, oh my God, this is a miracle. What's happening? Anyway, thank you for that.
You're welcome. Feels good to support you there.
Oh, feels amazing. Okay, well, let's take a quick break and when we come back, we'll go into these last three questions, which I think will be just as juicy, if not more. We'll be right back. We hope you're enjoying this episode. I want to take a quick break to let you know about a gift we created for you and your partner. We compiled our top 10 relationship agreements, agreements that have been so powerful in supporting the success of our partnership that we even turned them into our wedding vows. These agreements help us stay connected, growing, and thriving as a couple, and they've been critical to help us create a kind of we that's way beyond what we've ever experienced before. You can download this free gift at KristaVanderveer.com. That's KristaVanderveer.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, it would be so meaningful to us if you left us a rating and review. Not only does it help others find us, but it gives us critical feedback on how we're doing. Thanks in advance. And now back to the episode. Okay, welcome back. I have a really good question here for Will that I'm going to ask him that he doesn't know about. The question is there a personality trait that always ticks you off? However, I'm going to revise that question and I'm going to have it say, is there a personality trait that I have that always ticks you off?
That's a juicy question. I can honestly say that there's nothing about you that, quote, always ticks me off, unquote. If one of those things existed, then we would talk about it.
Unless it's kind of in the shadows and it's hard to access.
Unless we haven't discovered it yet. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, totally.
I think that there's a place where we get stuck sometimes that has to do with sensitivity to changes in plans.
Right, where I get stuck.
We get stuck together there.
Yeah.
And it feels like the trait that I perceive in you is somewhat intolerant attitude toward changes in plans.
Can you give an example?
So we had a moment of challenge yesterday when there was something in my calendar. It was in the wrong calendar. It was not in the calendar you could see. And it was a huge block of time. So it was actually pretty annoying anyway that was there for me too.
Right. And you actually couldn't quite see it either unless you're on the right device. So that was hard too.
Exactly.
When we have a day where we're doing stuff together, whether it's business stuff or work stuff or it's play stuff, sometimes we like to map it out so that we try to get everything in that we want to get in. And so we had mapped out yesterday, and then we realized that this thing showed up in the calendar. There was this thing that you found in the calendar that I couldn't see and I didn't know about. And you had, because of technology purposes that we hadn't figured out, you couldn't see it either. Okay, so that happened. And then what happened for me, from your perspective, around this inflexibility, your challenge with change in schedule?
I think it's just like an impatience or an intolerance of things shifting and changing that, you know, I feel like has me a little bit braced for rupture when I see something that, or something comes up at work where I'm managing a situation with a customer or someone who works with us or whatever, and it's taking more time than I planned for or that I wanted for it to take. So,
are you saying I'm not the center of your universe?
You are the center of my universe in a particular way, for sure.
Yeah, good answer.
You know, we have this beautiful tension between subtle differences in our values and what's important to us, and we hold them together and we create a lot of beautiful music together that way. But we are a little bit different in that regard.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you're bringing this up. I appreciate the feedback, and it's not like I'm surprised, super surprised by the feedback, but I'm glad that we're bringing it up because I can notice in myself that there is a feeling of control that I get when I have things laid out in a particular way. And life tends to be innately so chaotic, so unpredictable, so truly unknowable about what's going to happen, that there's something inside of me having some structure that has me feel less out of control. And so you get a little bit of the brunt of that, probably like fear and discomfort and frustration when it shows up between you and I. And I apologize for the impact of that because I know these things happen, of course. And I'm excited to lean in a little bit more around my discomfort around change and being out of control and just let that be there.
Thanks for that. I'm curious if my way of communicating when we're in the moment of that, if there's some way that would be better for me to communicate that, to let you know how important you are to me and how important our time is, if it's going to impact that, or, you know, is there some way that I'm not taking care of you in that moment the right way for you to know that this isn't a statement about how much I value the time with you?
Right. Thank you. I think for the most part, you do it really well. Like you're just like, you're checking in about impact. We're coming up with a new game plan. I think that where it gets harder is when the rare occasion when that's not immediately like just kind of talked through, then that can be hard. And if it was going to be even a next level conversation, it might be something to the effect of, I know that you like to have things scheduled because they have you feel in control. As though I am. I don't know. There might be some kind of contact around, listen, like, I know this is a challenge for you when things get shifted and changed around last minute, and I love you, and what do you need? But you basically do that anyway. You really do that.
Well, I can always get better at it. I don't think I do it exactly the way you just said it. It's good feedback.
Nice. Such a great conversation. Okay.
It's helpful for me to hear from you that that order helps you feel like more in control, because it's interesting just to reflect that my relationship with my calendar is really different from that.
What do you mean? It doesn't do that for you, or?
Yeah, it doesn't do that for me.
Okay. I feel like that would be an interesting conversation for us to continue.
Yeah. I'm ready to ask my third and final question. What is something that you'd like to try doing, but you haven't worked up the nerve to yet?
Ooh, I had that one for you too. Okay. This is a good one. The first thing that comes to me is, I think I need to think about how the best way to say this is. I'd like to try being a little bit more straight. Like, I think that sometimes I have the habit of kind of like when you're courting somebody, there's like a warm up and there's like flirting and there's creating a nice rapport before you deliver the straightness. And I feel like I've at times in my life attempted to do this, and it didn't go as well as I thought it might because there was a little bit of negative feedback about that. But there's a way that I feel like I'm just ready to be kind of a little bit more of a straight shooter.
Yeah.
In my life in general. And I don't want to do as much of the, what's that called? The warm-up phase. Like, what is it when you're like kissing before the final event? I forget what it's called.
Foreplay.
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Less foreplay and more just like, but loving straightness. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not talking about like coming down hard on people or like delivering hard news or anything like that. I just feel like there's a way that I could be a little bit more a straight shooter.
Yeah.
More like Janet Reno.
Janet Reno.
She kind of embodies this straight shooter.
Great straight shooter. Yeah, it's very admirable to be able to just say what you think and what you feel and not have all the concerns that certainly move through my head when I get ready to open my mouth.
Right. And I think the complexity of that is that there is, talking about the art of we, like there's a way to do that that's nuanced, where you're not closing down the person who's listening, but you're actually opening up their listening as a result of how you deliver it and the energy you're bringing and the way you're saying it. And so I think that I really want to master that.
Sounds like a skill that takes some practice. So just want to encourage you to get in the dojo. I'm happy to be there with you.
Yeah. Thank you. I so appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. My final question to you. You ready for it?
Yep.
Do you think there's such a thing as a harmless lie?
That is a great question. I think we probably would have to talk about what different kinds of lies are and, you know, the interpretation of like, what's a lie. Are we talking about lies of omission?
Uh-huh.
Like not telling you something that happened that is kind of inconsequential, but might be upsetting to you to hear about?
Like deliberately not telling me versus kind of like, there's probably a lot of inconsequential things that happen during our days that we don't share with each other because they're not consequential. That?
It's such a tough question because there's so much discernment that goes into what you share with your partner. You and I have, I think, pretty clear agreements about what we want to hear from each other if X, Y, or Z happened.
For example, like something that threatens the relationship.
Yeah. For example, like a third party that could be what we would call a third that needs management by us. So they don't become an unmanaged third.
Yeah, which means basically something that becomes more of a priority than are we.
Or at least an annoyance that we don't have a good handle on together.
That could be work. It could be another person who's flirting with one of us and we don't know how to manage that. It could be a sick parent. Like anything could be a third. So yeah, we have agreements about that.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm answering your question. I don't want to avoid the question, but I think it's a little too absolute in my mind to say there's no such thing as an inconsequential lie, because I think it depends on the perception of the receiver or the one who didn't get told in the example I'm using, the omission situation, whether that was a lie or not versus like, oh, I didn't think that I needed to share that detail with you.
From an honest place though, you're saying.
Right.
Like if there was a deliberate omission.
I would say that, of course, that's consequential. If you and I have had conversations or we have an agreement about this particular thing, really, I really want to hear if this ever happens, and I decide to withhold that, that's a withhold. That's going to have consequences for sure.
But there also might be omissions from non-specific incidences that you and I didn't talk about. There could be deliberate omissions.
Right.
I guess I would say that, I don't want to answer the question for you, but I think that there's something here about if there's a deliberate omission and we're intentionally hiding something, I guess the question for me is like, what are we standing for in partnership? Are we standing for the possibility and the practice of bringing things here that we know might impact our partner, but to work through those and become stronger? Or are we doing something where we're kind of in a mutual agreement that we don't want to know about some things that might activate us or trigger us or that kind of thing?
I agree with you. In the latter example, we either have an implicit agreement not to deal with something, like it's too uncomfortable to talk about some third person who has a crush on one of us or something like that. So we withhold that because it would be too uncomfortable to talk about. Or we don't have an agreement about it, and one of us is trying to manage something by not sharing it with the other person and isn't in the agreement that you just described, which I love, is, hey, let's bring everything here that's even the hard stuff so we can get our reps in the gym and learn how to navigate difficult moments together. The only way that can happen is by sharing the information.
Right. And we do, one of our agreements turned into vows is to bring everything here first, which I think we need to revisit that because I think maybe it's changed over time because we did talk about later using some of our friends if we needed to use our friends, if we felt like we couldn't bring something here first. But I like the idea of that because it's like bring the hard stuff here so we can do that. We can work through it together. So it's not a black and white answer. And it probably depends on what the couple is up to and what's important to each of the people inside the partnership, how they want to live their lives, what they don't really want to hear about or care about.
Right. Ultimately, what conversation you want to be in.
Exactly.
But if you're relationship nerds like us and you geek out on how to get stronger and stronger over time and, you know, enjoy this deeper level of freedom that you spoke to when I asked you, you know, what has changed in your perception about relationships, then you're going to want to have the hard conversations and find the courage to do that, even if it takes, you know, a process to get there, to find that courage to do it.
Yeah, always. Even though it can be hard at times, I always appreciate when you come to me with things that you need to talk about. And we need to talk about something and it feels like a sensitive topic. Either preface it with what I need to be prepared for and what we need to be prepared for in order to have a successful conversation, which is so helpful, even though it can still be hard and scary and triggering.
Yeah, it's a fun experiment for sure. Thanks for bringing the idea.
All right. Well, this is a fun experiment. So those of you who are listening, we so appreciate any feedback you can give us. We so appreciate if you give us a rating or review because that helps other people find our content. If you believe in our content, that would be amazing. And also, if you are interested in learning more about our agreements, we have the top 10 agreements on our website. You can find them at Krista Van Derveer. That's KristaVanDerveer. That's two E's at the end there. .com.
It's a long one.
I love the last name that I married into.
We probably should.
It's a long one. It's got like V's and D's and E's, and we can make a rap song out of it. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be with you next week. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you found this content valuable, please follow this show and share it with your partner or other key collaborators. If the show sparked an interesting conversation based on these topics, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Instagram at Art of We Podcast.
And we'll see you next time when we explore what it means to be better together, like butter and toast, on the Art of We Podcast.